Moncrief on News Talk.
Time for another of those, oh my God, am I that old items. It's 35 years since the release of Sinead O'Connor's Nothing Compares to You. It went to number one in all sorts of countries all over the world and, of course, transformed her career. Dave Fanning is far too young to remember it, but he did look it up on Wikipedia. Afternoon, Dave.
Sean, how you doing?
Not too bad. Where were you when you were in the States when it first came out?
Yes, I was over doing an interview. Please don't ask me who, I can't remember. That sounds very whatever, but it was a movie show interview, and I was in Boston, and I couldn't believe just how often I heard the song. It was on all the time. It was during the first week of its kind of major success, and then it spent 4 weeks at number one over there, so it became even huger. But yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and now Prince didn't write it specifically for her.
Oh my God, no. Yeah. Prince, I mean, like, Bob Dylan wrote an awful lot of stuff in the later. Like, Bob Dylan has an album called, the Bootleg album that he's got out. And, like, he had loads of songs on that. I think he was just sort of messing around with the band. The Basement Tapes is what it became known later. And he has about five or six songs on that. Five or six of those songs, which he just kind of threw out, became huge hits for other people, number ones and everything, like Manfred Mann, Mighty Quinn, or Julie Driscoll, Wheels on Fire, all those kind of things. He's thrown out so many songs because the studio doesn't seem to mean as much to him as it sort of might. But people see the gems of just how good these songs are. In fact, just to stay with that for a second, the biggest selling album of the 21st century is 21 by Adele. And what's on that? A pretty obscure Bob Dylan song called To Make You Feel My Love. That would definitely pay the mortgage on three of his mansions, no question. So the same thing, Prince was not as prolific necessarily, even though he was prolific with the music, but he wasn't as prolific with throwing out the songs. But he did throw out quite a few. And I mean, even around that time, Chaka Khan had I Feel For You, Tom Jones did a version of Kiss, you might remember. Simple Minds even did Sign of the Times. But that song was written for one of the bands he had going called The Family. And to be honest, like, it was in 85, 5 years beforehand. Nobody really knew them. Certainly nobody knew the song. Never got played in the radio, never released as a single. It was a funk band, and it was just a song called Nothing Compares to You. And he never even saw himself, you know, the possibilities of it. And it was Fachno Kelly, the manager of Sinead, I believe, who came around and said, listen, you should try this song. She did, and the rest is, you know, history.
Yeah, now, I'm not taking away from the song, but I suppose it came along at the right time in the MTV age. Because, you know, the video made the song even more powerful.
Absolutely, 100%. John Mabry made the video, pretty simple video, where she's walking through a few places in Paris. Mostly the camera's on her face all the time. She then, a tear runs down her face with one of the verses towards the end. Another tear goes down her face. She says it's completely genuine. She was thinking about her mother who had died in a car crash 5 years earlier outside Fox Rock Church. And all of this came to a head. Everything was real one take stuff. I mean, even when she made the song in the studio, it was just one take. And she didn't have any compression. That's what they do all the time. Like, if your voice is low, they bring it up with compression. If it's high, they bring it down. That's a simplistic way to describe it. It was just, you're leaving it as it is. I'm Sinead O'Connor. The voice is fine. I've had an album out that's been pretty good. I'm bringing out a second album that's even better. Just leave it alone. And people did not argue with Sinead at that stage.
Yeah.
So they did.
And that was the high point of her career, I suppose, really, in terms at least of, maybe she wouldn't see it that way, I'm sure she wouldn't have, but in terms of sales and profile.
Yeah, I mean, the album went on to sell 7 million copies and stayed at number one in the US for 6 weeks. The point about it is, it was the highlight of her, and you need to put career in some sort of parenthesis, because the minute this all happened, she realised, this is not what I want. I don't want this pop music career. And then a year later, or by 92, she tore up the picture on Saturday Night Live. She said no to 1,000 different award ceremonies, gave out hell about everybody who even gave out these awards, the record industry, everything else. And she did kill what you might call her career. But I mean, it was a strategic move in some ways, because she just wanted to follow her muse and make music. She never wanted a career, certainly not as a pop artist. I mean, the album she followed that up with was called Am I Not Your Girl? And it's a collection of jazz standards. Not exactly the perfect way to try to make it back up to number one. You know, and then she brought out a Shan Nose album. Then she brought out a reggae album, in you know, 10 years later. And, like, you know, which was produced over in Jamaica by the two big reggae producers, Sly Dunbar and Robbie Shakespeare. And so, like, she always just followed her own muse. And she never really wanted what you might call a career. She certainly never wanted pop stardom.
Yeah. Did that, though, but she still wanted to kind of make a living from making music.
Oh, gotcha.
But did, you know, say tearing up the Pope's picture and many of the statements she made, did that slam doors for her that might have been handy for her to be open?
Oh, there's no question. I mean, like if you look at it, if you think about it, I mean, the cover-ups about the Catholic Church, which he talked about 10 years before anybody else would even kind of mention it, let alone admit to it. She was targeted by loads of people for a metaphorical stoning, I'll call it, for at least 3 or 4 years, and then for another 7 or 8 as well. And then when it happened, and when the Pope came out and said, yeah, we've been pretty bad boys here in all these religious institutions. She never said, see, I told you so. It was never like that at all. That's not what she was about. She just wanted it all to stop. She wanted the cover-ups to stop. And even to this day, if she was alive, she'd still be trying to get a lot of the cover-ups to stop and a recompense to be given to those who should get it. You know, she basically endured an awful lot. And she always framed her own personal tragedies in political terms in the music. And that's what she wanted to do. She was a protest singer, not a pop singer. And that's what she said after Saturday Night Live.
Mm. How many times did you interview her?
Well, we just did a documentary, actually, for the opposition station some time back there, just before Christmas. And I unearthed 9 interviews with Sinead, including, by the way, the first one she ever did and the last one she ever did.
Oh, crikey. Did she so is there a difference between those first interview and the last interview? Had she changed
as
a person?
There's a huge difference. First of all, the things you have to do to the sound to turn up so you can hear the first one. She's so gentle. She whispers through the whole thing, you know, even though she was in a very good mood because she had just finished recording or just about to record, just finished the last few songs of the very first album, of which she got her own way. They didn't put a producer in front of her because she said no way. In fact, they sacked the producer because she said, I'll do it myself. So like that was, and then the later on, and there is a difference. The difference in the sound of her voice and a different in, you know, the hard living. It didn't. She had a very tough time. She really did. And it does get more kind of, I don't know, broken, if you like, later on.
Yeah. As a person, though, I mean, she, as you say, first interview, she should have been delighted. The last interview, how was she in herself, do you think?
She was better than you might think in some ways. I mean, like the last interview was her son had died and she wasn't doing any interviews really at all. And she was not in a good way. But the night then she came to the, the Choice Awards. And I had to give her the award for like classic album or something like that. And she really was in a good mood. And above all, the people in the thing, they just got up and gave her a sort of a standing ovation. And she definitely felt good that night. There was no question about that. She was in a better place than she had been. No question. Now, she died 3 or 4 months later.
Dave, thanks a million for talking to us today. That was the legendary Dave Fanning there. Someone says, Bob Dylan even wrote All Along the Watchtower. After Jimi Hendrix sang it, Bob said, that's Jimmy's song now. It's much more associated with him, though Dylan has performed it. I think there's Live at the Budokan, there's a version of it on that album. I can't believe it's 35 years since that song came out. It's the type of song that you never tire of. It's just as good listening now as it was back then.
Moncrief on News Talk.